you believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning and welcome to the show. It's an honor and a privilege to be hosting the show for you folks this morning. We've got some wins and some losses from the last couple of days that we're going to go over today. Right now, what I'd like to do is remind everybody about the Republic Broadcasting website, which is republicbroadcasting.org. You can certainly call in. The call-in number is 800-313-9443. As well, if you'd like to spread the word about Republic Broadcasting, you can order up 100 business cards for $8, includes shipping, and you get a bumper sticker. And for that, you can call 800-724-2719. That is from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Time, as the home office and studio is in Round Rock, Texas, just a little bit north of Austin. Beautiful city, by the way. I also want to remind everybody about Dave Champion's show at 3 o'clock Central Time, Monday through Friday. Dave's a good friend of mine. He talks about all of the wonderful things going on today with plenty of political commentary involved in that. A great show. And he's also sponsoring the Dave Champion Show Defensive Handgun Course at Front Sight, May 15th, 16th, 17th, and 18th of this year, just outside of Las Vegas. So great excuse to get away and get some training in, since we at 2A Radio are all about guns, self-defense, and your Second Amendment rights. To learn a little bit more about this, you can call Dave's office, speak to his assistant, Margo, at 775-751-0811. Okay, getting down to one of the losses that we had. During the reign of President George Bush, who just left office, they spent a few years going through, about 2.5 years, going through what it would take to allow concealed handguns within the boundaries of U.S. parks, because it had been disallowed for many a decade. Very, very long, arduous process. Well, anti-gunners decided to take that process to court. And a federal judge on Wednesday, 2 days ago, in a last-minute ruling enacted by President George W. Bush, the U.S. District Court Judge Colleen Culler Cottley issued a preliminary injunction in a lawsuit brought by gun control advocates and environmental groups to block the ruling, the rule enacted by President George W. Bush allowing carry in national parks. So, although we had it for a little bit of time, we don't have it anymore. It is the old school way of basically the folks that don't like the way a law or ruling goes to go find one single judge that agrees with them to smack their gavel and take everyone else's rights away. This is a very popular thing to do in the state of California. You've noticed that a lot of people in California will vote over huge referendums, such as banning, I think the latest one was banning gay marriage, before they had banning social services to illegal aliens. And by resounding percentages, they pass these at the voter level. But you find a group that supports that, a very fringe group, and they find a single judge to somehow overturn it as not being constitutional or legal. We'll get a little bit deeper into this when we return from the break.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Well, back from the break. Okay, continuing on about this ruling that a judge made, now blocking the rule that had permitted us for a short period of time to carry concealed guns in U.S. parks, the three anti-gun groups that brought the suit, the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, the National Parks Conservation Association, and the Coalition of National Park Service Retirees argued that the Bush administration action violated several laws. In the judge's ruling, she agreed that the government's process had been, quote, outstandingly flawed. Now, in 2.5 years, I don't know how it could be, but she explains. She noted that the government justified its decision to forego an environmental analysis on the grounds that the rule does not authorize environmental impacts, calling this a tautology. She wrote that officials abdicated their congressionally mandated obligation to evaluate environmental impacts and ignored, without sufficient explanation, substantial information in the administrative record concerning environmental impacts of the rule. Well, doesn't that just tickle you pink? The regulation, which took effect January 9th, allowed visitors to carry loaded concealed guns into national parks and wildlife refuges if state laws there allowed it in public places. In most cases, a state concealed weapons permit would be required to carry a concealed weapon into a national park. In the past, guns had been allowed in such areas only if they were unloaded, stored, or dismantled. Gun rights advocates say that they saw no reason to be denied the right to carry concealed weapons in parks when they could in other public places. Brian Ferner, associate director for the parks, associate director for park uses at the National Park Conservation Association, said his group is extremely pleased with both the court decision and the fact that the Interior is now conducting an internal review of the rule's environmental impact. This decision by the courts reaffirms our concerns and the concerns of park rangers across the country that this new regulation has serious impacts on the parks and increases the risk of opportunistic poaching for wildlife in parks and increases the risk to park visitors. Now, you have got to be kidding me. A concealed handgun. The whole principle behind that is for self-defense. To get one in any state in the land, you have to go through some form of class. What this is all about, most states you have to shoot some sort of qualification test, and you have to understand the parameters with which you can actually use a gun for self-defense, which is summed up generally in most states. You have to be, what is the proper terminology here? You have to be concerned for threat to life or serious bodily harm, imminent threat to life or serious bodily harm. Okay, does someone possess the ability to cause you death or serious bodily harm? And do they show you the intent to do that? All right? Anybody could have the ability, but are they showing the intent? So you have to be afraid of those things. So now we've got this group in the National Park Conservation Association, this guy Brian Ferner, basically mimicking all the anti-gun rhetoric that, you know, it's really what it is we don't want to change and we're afraid of people that are willing to defend themselves. So they go through and say, well, it's an environmental impact. How? It's the same people going about the same things, doing it the same way. They're not going to be going out there and just shooting things up, because if they do, they will lose their concealed weapons permit. You don't seem to understand that if someone gets a CCW, concealed weapons permit, in a state, if they get in trouble for any reason when it comes to guns or violating the use of that permit, they lose it, and they're not willing to do that, Mr. Ferner, or Judge Kohler Cottley. They're not willing to do that, to risk the loss of this permit in any manner. just to go screw around in a national park or a wildlife conservation area. You folks are idiots. Thank you. Now, going on to a win. In Illinois, very anti-gun state. Lots of anti-gun laws. Right now, in front of their state legislature, they have some 55 anti-gun pieces of legislation to consider this session. Well, in Illinois Supreme Court yesterday, they dismissed yet another reckless lawsuit aimed at putting firearms manufacturers out of business. Adams versus Beretta was dismissed under the protection of law, under the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act of 2005, abbreviated PLCAA, for the benefit of the rest of this article. The court's order affirmed the original trial court judgment in the case. This is the second judicial decision in 2009 upholding a dismissal under the PLCAA. 10 days ago, the U.S. Supreme Court denied appeals in the cases of New York versus Beretta and District of Columbia versus Beretta. So everybody going after Beretta. Who, by the way, makes the handgun for the U.S. military. They call it the M9. Our version that we can buy is the 92F. NRA chief lobbyist Chris W. Cox said, quote, "We are pleased that the court recognized that the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act is the law of the land. America's law-abiding firearms manufacturers must be protected from reckless lawsuits, such as this one, that have no legal merit. Blaming gun manufacturers for the acts of criminals is not the way we do things in America, and today the Illinois Supreme Court confirmed this view." Thank you to the Illinois Supreme Court. Even though a lot of the folks in the legislature or in a legislative role throughout the entire state of Illinois, I should generally say about the northern half of Illinois, are very anti-gun, and you looked at this in a constitutional manner and ruled properly. Thank you. The Illinois Supreme Court found that the discharge of the Beretta was caused by a volatile act that constituted a criminal offense, which act shall be considered the sole proximate cause of any resulting death. Therefore, what they said was it's not the result of the gun manufacturer. Now, if I get into a traffic accident later today, hopefully I will not, I can sue the manufacturer of the vehicle that the other driver was driving when they hit me, provided it was their fault. Now, that's the ideology of how these folks were trying to sue gun manufacturers. Or if someone gets drunk by drinking Budweiser and they hit me, can I sue Budweiser? Well, the answer, of course, is no. However, some anti-gun attorneys took these cases and took them to anti-gun courts and had anti-gun judges look at the cases, and they were going forth, which is why the PLCAA was enacted in 2005. The court also agreed with the appellate court in finding the PLCAA was constitutional. Finally, it let stand the trial court's findings that the Beretta pistol was not unreasonably dangerous or defectively designed, and that the danger of pointing a gun at another person and pulling the trigger is open and obvious, even if the person pointing the gun mistakenly believes the gun is not loaded. Okay, that takes us to the safety rules of firearms. Rule 1, treat all guns as if they are loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. Rule 4, be aware of your target and what's in line with it. And an additional rule I like to throw in, keep your firearms inaccessible to untrained or irresponsible people. So, you pick up an allegedly empty gun, you press the trigger and it goes bang and someone gets shot. Whose fault is that? Well, it's the fault of the person who picked the gun up and didn't treat it properly. check them. Don't be the next person doing this sort of thing. I contracted at a military base. While at that military base, I heard of a story at a neighboring military base where a security professional, allegedly, at this base had just finished cleaning his gun and doing whatnot, distracted back and forth between cleaning and get the thing ready to go. As a child was riding his bicycle home from school, this security professional pointed his gun, allegedly empty, at the child on the bicycle, tracked him, and pressed, expecting to hear click from the gun. The bullet was in the chamber because the security professional had not checked. Discharged the round and actually hit the kid on the bike, killing him. This was absolutely unintentional. However, it happened. The reason it happened is through negligence. You will be hard-pressed to find very many accidental discharges. The majority of them are negligent discharges, hence the term ND, not AD. The only accidents I can think of is through a defective gun or defective ammunition, which is incredibly minuscule, especially when it comes to the negligence involved when most of these accidents take place. It's responsibility in your hands, responsibility in your household for the guns that you own. More on what's going on around the country with wins and losses when we come back.
Irresponsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back. For those of you in Maryland, listen up. A couple of things for you to be concerned about. Wednesday, the House of Delegates agreed on measures that would seize firearms from suspects of protective orders. One of the measures would give judges the power to confiscate firearms for temporary injunctions. The Maryland Senate has still not voted on the measure since hearing testimony in February. Now, here's the issue with this. That means the judges can say that they can seize firearms from temporary protective orders, and anybody can file one of those. That means that the somewheres along the line, some government bureaucracy ends up with your guns. As it has been up to this point, as I understand in Maryland, you cannot possess them. So you can give them to someone else under their control or a federal firearms licensee, a gun dealer. If the government takes them in some capacity, state government, local government, police, sheriffs, whatever, it's generally an incredibly long, arduous process to get them back once the time has elapsed, be it a couple of weeks or a year, whatever it may be. So now we're having the government basically seize guns, which is never a good idea. Another bill in the House, House Bill 1446 in Maryland, is set for hearing by the House Judiciary Committee today. The bill would require a long paper trail and increasing police presence for anyone buying and selling firearms ammunition. This bill is nothing more than de facto registration of guns that would make it easier for the government to seize the firearms of law-abiding citizens. It is always criminals who benefit from more gun laws, folks. Law-abiding citizens always lose as their rights are restricted, making it easier for them to become victims. Criminals don't adhere to the laws anyway, so more gun restrictions are pointless. This may even be an increased tax coming through on this bill on ammunition that would affect gun owners in this economy. The pro-gun progressive gave a troubling account several years ago of a Maryland Walmart employee recording an ammunition purchase in a logbook. This could be a chilling picture of what the future of Maryland may look like for gun owners. It's almost straight out of the plot of George Orwell's 1984. Also in Maryland, A proposed bill attacks hunting. On Wednesday, March 18th, 2 days ago, at 1 p.m., the Maryland House Environmental Matters Committee held a hearing on House Bill 1309 and will vote on the bill in the near future. House Bill 1309 would arbitrarily expand the hunting safety zone from 150 yards to 300 yards from any occupied building. House Bill 1309 is sponsored by Delegate Barbara Frisch, a Democrat out of, I guess, Area 21, and Delegate James Hubbard, another Democrat out of 23A, two anti-hunting legislators whose goal is to end all hunting in Maryland. You folks in Maryland must make your voices heard if you are going to defeat this anti-hunting measure and protect the future of hunting in Maryland. So the anti-hunting measure is also an anti-gun measure. Even if you're not a hunter and you're into self-defense, you should get rid of this bill by contacting your legislators and the House on this, and in the Senate if it passes. It's one of these deals, folks, where you got to realize that gun ownership is like eating an elephant. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. How do they erode our gun rights? One piece at a time. This is one of them. Notice this doesn't deal with archery, just with guns. All right? I am sickened to the point when it comes to these anti-gun measures where they pass laws to prevent what is otherwise a problem from the criminal element. Now, criminals don't abide by laws. Otherwise, they wouldn't be criminals. So, if criminals are not going to abide by the laws, why restrict the law-abiding? Because the criminals still don't care. If the criminals want to get ammunition and they don't want to go through some process of having it logged in and out, they're going to steal it. Or maybe they'll go across state lines and buy it and bring it back. They're going to find a way around this. Criminals are pretty stupid for being criminals, but once they decide to do that, they find ways around laws. They're crafty that way. At least the ones that don't get caught very often are crafty that way. So let's say that you're a gangbanger and you're in Maryland, and yes, they exist, and you want to get some ammunition for your illegally possessed gun, which you illegally carry concealed. Are you going to go to the local sporting goods store and go through the ammunition logging request in order to buy ammunition for your illegal gun that is illegally possessed and illegally concealed on your person? No, you're going to get ammunition illegally. These laws are ridiculous. All they do is restrict you, they restrict me, they restrict everybody else that abides by the law, and they provide an easier avenue for the criminals. We need to call our legislators, write them, and show up in person and stop this. Which is exactly what happened to the North in Connecticut, which we'll talk about when we return from the break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule three, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Karnes. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, welcome back. Let's talk about some of the wins across the country recently. In Hartford, Connecticut. Now, Connecticut has not been very pro-gun at all. However, we put out the word on this show and a few other shows about some of the anti-gun measures that were out there. A group of hunters and sportsmen were loaded for bear as they filled the hearing room this past Monday to testify against a bill before the Judiciary Committee that would require micro-stamping technology on semi-automatic pistols sold in the state. Joshua Horowitz, executive director of the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence, said the bill is a much-needed aid to police. Quote, at crime scenes across the country, across Connecticut, the most common thing you see is a cartridge, he said. Horowitz pointed out that the technology endorsed by the International Association of Chiefs of Police last year, quote, microstamping provides the missing link between the criminal and the firearm, end quote. Senate State Majority Leader Martin Looney, a Democrat from New Haven, Connecticut, testified for the bill defending its constitutionality. Quote, this is just another example of reasonable state regulation. This would just be another tool in the arsenal of law enforcement, end quote. So I got to ask you, how many unsolved crimes across Connecticut, across the country, are there that could be potentially solved with this technology alone? Now, at a crime scene, the only thing left are a bunch of shell casings. Okay. What crime was committed and what evidence do you have with the exception of the shell casings where this technology alone would solve the case? Do you have a body? Do you have video surveillance? Do you have eyewitnesses? Do you have license plate numbers off vehicles leaving the area at a high speed directly after you hear bang, 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 bang? What do you have? So their idea is, oh, we could connect these shell casings to the gun. Well, I'll also tell you this. I have looked into this micro-stamping technology. And with a file, you can defeat it in under a minute. So you get the gun, do your little file thing, and it's gone, which is exactly what criminals will do. Even if they don't do it, they're not going to care because they're using, generally, an illegally possessed gun, which was stolen at some point in time before. Either they stole it, or they got it from somebody who stole it, or they got it from somebody who got it from somebody who also stole it. It reminds me of a scene in the movie Starsky and Hutch where Snoop Dogg played Huggy Bear, and he says, I know people who rob from people. Well, that's what the criminal underworld is all about. So do you really think this is going to solve any crimes? The answer is absolutely not. If anybody's going to commit a crime like this, if they're going to be prepared to do it before the crime is committed, even if it's just vandalism, pull out a gun and start shooting a bunch of windows and some storefronts or whatnot, if they've got the mindset to do that, they're going to have the forethought that if they ever do decide to do that, they don't want to have these micro-stamp-laden casings all over, so they're going to defeat the technology. Don't be roped in by these anti-gunners to think that criminals are going to not find a way around this. It's very easy to get around this one, steal a file, take it to your stolen gun, and no longer will any micro-stamping be apparent on any shell casings that you fire. As a matter of fact, an enterprising person could put a symbol to be put on there that might just be a line or a dash. No longer a serial number. And you'd never know until you actually got that gun later, because it's not going to say where this line or dash gun is. Even if you find the number and the gun's been stolen, you can go back to the person who owned the gun and filed a police report on it. Where the hell's the gun? I filed a police report. Quit kicking in my door. Will you pay for the door now? No. We can kick all the doors we want. We can destroy all we want. You get to pay for it. We don't reimburse for that sort of thing. So there you are out of Hartford, Connecticut. Thank you to all of the hunters, sportsmen, and Second Amendment advocates that showed up for that hearing. Another win. In Phoenix, Arizona, an Arizona judge has dismissed criminal charges against a Phoenix gun shop owner accused of supplying firearms to Mexican drug cartels. Now, you can see just the way this opening line goes as to where the person who wrote this story sits on guns, rather anti-gun. Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Robert Gottsfield ruled Wednesday that the prosecution's evidence against George Inkandosian was insufficient to support conviction. The 47-year-old gun shop owner was accused of selling more than 700, quote, weapons of choice to straw buyers, knowing that the firearms, like AK-47s, were bought on behalf of Mexican narcotics syndicates. He was charged with fraud, money laundering, and other offenses. Gutsfield, the judge, ruled that all the gun purchases were conducted legally, even if weapons ended up with the cartels. The state attorney general's office says it plans to appeal. So, I don't know the ins and outs of this case. I just know the facts of the case, as it's been reported. Which, you know what, that's actually kind of a contradiction in terms. The facts as reported. There is an amendment out there called the First Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion. And it's freedom of the press, but it doesn't say freedom of accurate press. It just says freedom of the press. Now, in the last probably 15 years or so, I have been intimately familiar, as in one way, shape, or form, directly involved, either myself or through one of my lifelong friends or something, on maybe 30 different news reports that have come out. And of all of those different news reports, be it television or newspaper, not a single one of them is any more than about 60 to 70% accurate on a good day. Some of them have been less than 20% accurate. Out of 30 stories, all of them have had a minimum of 30% to about 80% inaccuracies in the reporting. So that leads me to believe that probably every story, for the most part, when put together by a professional journalist, and by professional, I don't mean conduct, by professional I mean they get paid to do it, that they're wrong. They just don't have everything in there. I would imagine there's a few reporters out there, like the investigative type, that might get a little bit more, but yet they're very common in my circle. Very common in my circle that these investigative reporters really kind of sweeten the pot with some things or some little comments or tidbits or contextual misrepresentations just to sweeten the pot and keep everybody watching, which then keeps the advertisers paying more money and keeps money in the pockets of everyone. So we'll see where this one goes in Arizona. This one comes from the Hill. Pro-gun Democrats oppose new assault weapons ban proposal by Attorney General Eric Holder. 65 House Democrats said Wednesday that they would oppose any attempt by the Obama administration to basically force feed to the Congress trying to revive a ban on military-style weapons that President Bill Clinton signed into law in 1994 and President George W. Bush let expire. Now, it's funny. They blame all of the presidents. Bill Clinton signed it into law. George Bush let it expire. George Bush does not control the legislature. He does not control the Congress. Now, George Bush did say that if it were reinstated prior to the ban, to when this ban expired in September of 2004, that if it came across his desk, he would consider signing it. Now, he said that to appease any anti-gunners that were out there, knowing full well that it was not going to pass through a Republican-controlled Congress. Even so, I was not pleased to hear that he said, well, if it comes across, we'll look at signing it. I was not pleased to hear that at all. You've got to stick to your guns, not just in a gun-related matter. You've got to stick to your principles. Unfortunately, politicians, and the higher up the food chain they get, or I should say maybe lower down the gutter they get, such as Capitol Hill, kind of a Capitol gutter in a lot of instances, they're going to say whatever the hell they want to, such as Connecticut Senator Dodd about this whole thing with the bonuses paid to AIG executives. 2 days ago, he came out and said, I don't know where the language allowing these bonuses came from. Then the next day, yesterday, he said, oh, well, the administration asked us to put this verbiage into this law to allow these bonuses. Great. Thanks for talking out of both sides of your mouth in a mere 24 hours. Continuing. The pro-gun Democrats, led by Mike Ross, Democrat of Arkansas, who wrote Attorney General Eric Holder that they would, quote, actively oppose any effort to reinstate the 1994 ban or pass any similar law, end quote. They urged the administration to avoid long and divisive fight over gun control issues at a time when Washington needs to concentrate on the economic crisis. Thank you, Representative Mike Ross, Democrat of Arkansas. So you take the split in the House between Democrats and Republicans. You're not going to find Republicans who are going to vote for gun control because gun control is anti-Second Amendment control. And taking in Second Amendment control is basically taking away rights and liberties, and the Republicans generally will not allow that sort of thing. You tack on the 65 Democrats who just said they won't do that. You tack on the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who said she's not interested in bringing up anything. And what do you have? You have no gun ban going through. You've also got on the other end the Senate, where you've got Democrat Harry Reid of Nevada, who is the Senate Majority Leader, saying that he has no interest in allowing any anti-gun legislation through. And they have 65 of the 100 senators pass a provision, I should say a measure, which would repeal all the anti-gun legislation within Washington, D.C. So although we've got Democrat House, Democrat Senate, and Democrat White House, the chances of seeing sweeping anti-gun measures passed and signed into law are few and far between. However, we cannot rest on our laurels because this could change with the wind. Yesterday, the House decided to try to fast-track a measure to impose a 90% tax on the bonuses paid to AIG executives who did not return the bonuses. Completely unconstitutional, essentially an illegal deal. But as they were in the attempt to pass this, at one point in time, roughly 385 representatives voted for it. Within the closing minute or two, nearly 100 of them changed their vote. So they had less than 60% to pass this fast-track measure. They knew it was unconstitutional. They were just wasting a day of congressional time to try to prove a point. So we don't know if these folks are going to change their minds. However, it'll be up to you and I to keep in touch with what's going on up on the Hill. The House letter came a day after Montana's two Democratic senators wrote a similar letter to Holder saying that the Justice Department should enforce existing laws before considering new gun ownership restrictions. Quote, "We strongly oppose any legislation that would infringe upon the rights of individual gun owners," they said. There are so many laws on the books that are not enforced. Part of the reason is they are not funded, or they're just simply overlooked. There are so many laws for law enforcement that they can't simply concentrate on all of them. The letters came after Holder, during a news conference to announce the arrest of a Mexican drug dealer, said the drug cartels were obtaining high-powered weapons like AK-47s from U.S. gun stores, and said the Obama administration supported reinstituting the ban on the sale of assault-style weapons. Again, assault weapons. Like this, gun's going to get up out of a cabinet or a case and assault you in the middle of the night. Assault weapons. Why don't we call them a battery weapon? Because assault, by definition, is the unsuccessful attempt to put a physical implement on someone. Battery is the successful attempt. So why don't we call it a battery weapon? A battery-style weapon. Just to keep up to tune with what the actual law says. Goofballs. Senator Dianne Feinstein of California has said she plans to introduce legislation to bring back the weapons ban. Feinstein was author of the 1994 bill, which banned 19 styles of semi-automatic military-style guns. The laws expired under the Bush administration in 2004. Another long-term goal is requiring that all guns should conduct background checks before selling firearms. All gun shows, pardon me. I believe that's already a law, guys. The National Rifle Association has said it is mobilizing to stop any assault weapons ban, and the opposition of 65 House Democrats, many from rural conservative districts with strong pro-gun sentiments, probably would doom any legislation drive to restrict gun ownership. Already this year, Republicans have stalled legislation that would give the District of Columbia a voting representative in the House by linking the bill to a measure significantly weakening D.C.'s gun laws. House Democratic leaders have put off a vote on the voting rights bill out of concern that pro-gun Democrats would oppose it if it's separate from the gun measure. Imagine that. Even as we would historically believe Democrats on the Hill are anti-gun, they are not. There's been so much pro-gun legislation over the last 20 years, with the exception of that ban in 94, and that was during a Democrat-controlled House and Senate and White House. However, they learned their lesson because the majority of the people that voted for that bill lost their re-election bid just a couple of months later. Imagine that. It was passed in September of 94 when they were up for re-election in November of 94, and the majority of them, vast majority in the House and the Senate, lost their re-election bid, and control of both houses immediately went back to the Republican Party because of the garbage legislation. It's my view that all laws passed should have a 10-year expiration limit. That way, after about 9.5 years, they're going to stop randomly passing laws and take a look at the ones that actually needed to be passed and whether they needed to be reaffirmed. It'll keep them busy. And the ones that didn't need to be passed are going to go bye-bye because they're going to expire. Imagine that. More on the idiocracy of anti-gunners when we return. 800-313-9443.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The two-way radio show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
So we already know that Illinois is pretty well anti-gun. Now the governor is very pro-tax. Keep this in mind. Governor Pat Quinn of Illinois is calling for a hike in Illinois' income tax for families making more than $56,000 a year, to where their income tax may jump 50%. Governor Pat Quinn confirmed Friday that he plans to raise taxes on some Illinois residents to combat deficits in a difficult state budget and called for broader tax reform. That means raising of taxes. Quinn said this past Friday he plans to hike taxes for families that make more than $56,000 a year. But Quinn contends that his income tax proposal would amount to a tax cut for millions of Illinoisans by increasing the personal exemption to let them shield more income from being taxed. Basically, what that means is tax the rich. And $56,000 a year in Illinois would be rich. Now, Governor of Illinois, I've got to tell you, that is exactly the catalyst that caused the American Revolution. That was it. Taxing. Overly taxing your citizens. So, is this the type of thing we want to tolerate in this country? The answer is no. We proved it about 130 years ago plus. About 240 years ago now. Pardon me. About 240 years ago. We don't want to be taxed like this. So knock it off. And this is the same governor that's anti-gun. Why does he not want people to have guns? Well, so he could do crap like this. Wonderful. All right. By the way, the Department of Defense is giving Lake City $49 million to modernize their plant so that they can keep up with making ammunition for the government, which is nice because when they have their surplus, it benefits you and I, surplus ammo. That was the U.S. Army Department of Defense. Now, in the legislature of the state of Idaho, they decided they had had enough, and they wrote a letter about a week or so ago to Congress. And it essentially boils down to this. I'm going to forego all the whereases in the beginning of this. We can get to the highlighted portion. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the members of the first regular session of the 60th Idaho Legislature, the House of Representatives and the Senate concurring therein that the members of the United States Congress cease and desist attempting to enact federal legislation impending on individual rights of every American to keep and bear arms in any manner. Specifically, that members of Congress oppose the passage of the Firearms Licensing and Record Act sale of 2009 and any similar legislation. That is H.R. 45, introduced by Representative Bobby Rush of Illinois, a co-founding member of the Black Panthers in the 60s of Chicago, who also did 6 months on illegal weapons charges around that era. That's who's written this H.R. 45. Don't know about you guys, but I am sick of that sort of thing. We have some winds going. We are changing the minds. Let's keep it that way. Tune in Monday. We'll be back. Hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.